Mr. Glanfield, Reel 8. Now, what was your next posting then? You were, after you'd been in this officer's holding unit?
I was posted to number 10 holding and selection centre.
Where was that at?
And that was at a place called Ongien, E-N-G-I-E-N, which is between Brussels and Tournai.
And when was that? July? Or?
That would be, yes, sometime in July. I was posted there as the impressed holder.
Could you explain what that is, didn't you?
It means being in charge of all the currency, the money, at that particular centre, the operation was to deal with other ranks who were being demobilised back to England, and they spent 1 or 2 days at this centre. That was one part of it. The other part was to deal with a similar amount of troops, according to the accommodation in that area, going the other way to the Army of the Rhine, British Army of the Rhine. So it did two functions, and I was involved with the money side of it.
What exactly were you doing?
I was paying out the money which the troops coming from Germany or Italy or wherever they came from wanted when they came back as far as there.
So exchanging the currency?
The other thing was exchanging the currency and also obtaining money on their paybooks.
So paying them?
Paying them, yes.
What's your memory of those duties?
Pardon?
What do you remember about the duties? What
happened? Oh, yes, well, as well as myself, I had a sergeant and two or three other ranks whose duties were to arrange the what was to be done by the officer, myself, as far as the units, the troops themselves, who wanted this facility. And from usually it took 4 days, the first 4 days of the week, Monday to Thursday, doing this during the day at 10 or 15 minute intervals, one squad after another, and then on the fifth day, the Friday, not doing any dealing with the troops who were passing through, but to account for it all. And I had the accounting to do, which was done, sent away once a month to the army headquarters. Also, once a week, or sometimes twice a week, I took a ton, a truck, and a big escort in the truck to Brussels, and went to the Westminster Bank head office there, and I had checkbooks to get as much money as I thought was required in Belgian currency to last me till the next time, and it amounted to a lot of money dealing with.
And that would be used to pay the troops.
Yes, and this money was guarded in a safe in by troops night and day for the whole time while there was money there. Well, all the time.
And obviously they were looking at your banking experience.
They knew my banking experience already, according to my record. I performed that for, until about October, I think.
About 3 or 4 months.
Yes, I was in civilian billets. The other officers in that holding and selection centre were psychiatrists. I think there were five. And they were merely dealing with the intake from the UK, deciding according to the demand in the Army of the Rhine what was required. 200 cooks, 100 drivers, so many clerks, and so on. And they allocated the personnel to the jobs required, fitted them in other words. They had to, they were only fresh intake from Britain, and according to the demand, they had these specialists who dealt with them.
So they just... who was suited to putting the round pegs in the round holes?
Yes, yes. That was the selection side of it, the holding and selection.
Right, anything else about your time there at Ungern?
I did actually go to the... while I was in the Westminster Bank head office there, I asked them if there was any chance of me completing my army career there in Belgium in their head office there, but they found that they got all the staff that were necessary, but so I awaited my next call, which was about October.
What happened then?
I finished with the Imprest account, and I was told to report to the number 2 release embarkation camp. Number 2 release embarkation camp, which was in Tournai.
And what did that job, what was your job there?
My job there was, I was administration officer.
What was your, what did that entail? Just run through the basic tasks.
That entailed a certain amount of discipline. We had a staff of 200 civilians and about 100 soldiers, troops. It dealt with officers only, up to the rank of lieutenant colonel, and they reached this this centre. It was what had been a very large school, and there was sufficient accommodation for up to about 100 or 150 officers. So they had quite a big staff dealing with that, and they arrived during the day, spent the night there, were fed there. There was a bar. And so on. They had all the comforts they wanted. They could go into the town, and the next morning they were assembled. A roll call was given. They were put on trucks, taken to the station, and then sent back to the UK via Ostend. I looked after the accounts there as well, because there was quite a lot of money involved in keeping the unit bar for the officers and so on. And the other job during the day, I had an office with my name and so on the door to myself. And the other part of it was dealing with the officers who were causing money problems for the officer in the pay corps who changed their money and attended to the officers' facilities, but with some officers he had problems because the officers had money which he wouldn't exchange for one reason or other. They either had too much money or they had money which they weren't entitled to. And all he did was impound that money, give them a receipt and tell them to report to the admin officer, which was me. I shared my room with this officer, Lieutenant Lamacraft, spelled L-A-M-A, Craft, who I subsequently found out was not a Army of the Pay Corps at all, really. He was at that time, but he was somebody else. He was working for the government. He was in military intelligence, MI5 or
what
6.
What exactly was going on then?
The sort of thing that was going on was I probably had about 3 officers a day out of 100 that, for one reason or another, they hadn't complied with the army rules, which meant that they could only change money which they'd cashed in the in a pay office, and they had records in a book there, only up to the amount that they'd actually cashed and drawn. And if they had excess of that, they weren't entitled to it. They must have, some said, oh, they'd won money with bets, racing, all sorts of things, and anything except the truth.
And the truth would be?
Well, I provided them with forms provided by the War Office to myself, or to the whoever did that job. It was 3 forms in triplicate. That meant they had 9 forms to fill in. It took them about half an hour to do it, giving all the circumstances. And as an example of the sort of thing that had happened was one officer who was very friendly in his attitude to me, I don't know why, he said, do you go to the cinema? And I said, well, I have done on occasion, I don't very often, I don't have much opportunity. But he said, well, here are some free tickets to go, if you wish to go. The cinema's in Brussels, and I own that cinema. That's what he told me.
So what have they been doing? They've been operating on the black market, or what?
They must have been operating other than the normal things. I never questioned them on any further. They filled these forms in, I just passed them through to the War Office. I never heard any more. I don't think they did either.
So they got away with it?
No, they lost their money.
They lost their money, yeah.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just conceal the money?
Because it wasn't any good in England. It was only German money or French money or Italian money. One peculiar thing happened when I was there. Some officers, did all sorts of peculiar things. But one I remember, he arrived there, I'm not sure of his rank, but he wasn't a junior rank. And he arrived there in a small Italian vehicle, smaller than a Jeep, I don't know what it was. And he asked, and it came to my notice, he asked if that wasn't normal. He'd normally come in army or vehicles or by train. If he could park it there, and I said yes. Yes, this officer parked this small vehicle in the compound of the where we were, and to be sure that it wouldn't be stolen, because I warned him that it could be stolen. He had the wheels taken off, and the car itself supported on wooden pieces of wood, and he thought that would be all right, but it wasn't apparently. And the next morning, the vehicle had disappeared. It wasn't all that heavy, I don't think, but it had been stolen overnight. Anyway, I got the vehicle back. I saw the burgomaster, and I threatened him with dire consequences if the vehicle wasn't brought back straight away, and he sorted it out, and the vehicle did come back. So that was a just a digression of what one of the things that went on there. Another thing I remember while I was there, that 200 army sheets disappeared from that unit one night. They were never found, but obviously it was some civilian contacts that had arranged this. And occasionally an officer would go into Tournai, which was only about a mile from where we were, and remain in some cafe or somewhere for the night, and next morning he wasn't available for leaving for England, so I had to wait until he contacted us, and then he would go back a day or two later. There was no discipline, of course, for the man. He was an officer.
So how long were you there, or anything else, but other than that, how long were you there at Tournai?
Let's see. I was there until the end of June in 46, yes. End of June 46.
You were there 8 months.
Yes.
So what happened as you started to reach the end? Were you looking forward to your own demob?
Yes. I was looking forward to getting back to some regular form of existence other than merely being in the army. I'd been in the army quite a long time. So when the time came, it had been arranged that I would leave about the end of June. I had delayed my departure by about 3 months, I think, because I was quite happy there. I wasn't all that ready to go back quite as soon as that. And when it finally, the arrangement came, I was more or less free to do what I wished. And I arranged to leave about the end of June.
Now, just before, how had you got on with the Belgians during all that period? Because, I mean, that's nearly a year there. How do you...
I got on quite well with the Belgians. I made quite a few friends, and I had no problem with any Belgians. They're all very friendly. Yes. I married a Belgian while I was out there a few months before I finally arranged to be demobbed. And I came back after I had been demobbed in order to bring her back to England, because Belgians were not... allowed free access to other countries, I don't think, then. Although she was by then a British national, and she would have been free to go, but I came back and and collected her and anything she wanted to bring with her to England.
Now, what about your demobilisation? That would be when?
The end of June in 45.
Do you remember 46. What was the actual procedure?
Well, I just... I think one of the reasons at the back of my mind was that why I wanted to be demobbed at that time. I seem to remember now that the unit was going to finally close down for being demobbed via Ostend, and people being demobbed were going to be demobbed via Hamburg. So I thought I will go to Hamburg and go that way while I can, rather than get involved with the final transfer of the unit or anything involved with it. It was a good time to get my demob. And I went by train singly on my own and went to a barracks there, spent one or two nights there, and then got a boat, a troop carrier it would be, to Hull in Yorkshire, and I was demobbed from there.
And what about your post after the war? Did you go? You went back to banking, I presume?
I went back to banking, yes, but that wasn't the end of the army activity. I had other activity subsequently, only in a minor way, but anyway, I moved from the north of England where I had worked before the war in Bradford, and I notified the head office of the bank that now I had become married and I had to look for a home. I would prefer to move to the south of England, where I had the opportunity of accommodation without any problems. And subsequently, after being back at Bradford, within a few weeks, I was given a move to London. And I had immediate accommodation from relatives of mine.
So that's where you that was your banking career, was in London, and you.
Yes.
Did you have any problems acclimatizing to civilian life, or were you all no problem?
No, not really.
What about this? Your continued connections with the army then? What were they? Were you called up on reserve?
Yes. I'm not sure how many years it was, but I think it was sometime during the early days of the Cold War, or what is called the Cold War. I don't know when that was, but it was sometime after Suez, I believe, after the Suez crisis. I was called up again, and I went to RAF Stanmore. We weren't actually accommodated at Stanmore, but it was a small unit, a few officers and a number of men who were accommodated with a plotting room, and we didn't have the radar, but merely a refresher course on the activities of the operations room. Not necessarily mobile, but operations room activities. It only lasted 2 weeks, and as I still had my uniform and so on, there was no problem.
You didn't mind?
I didn't mind, no.
Had things moved on, or was it very similar?
No, all the things were almost identical. There was really wasn't much use, but it was just to, I think, as much as anything, to see that the people were still able to think clearly and operate if necessary. Apparently, did further service in the army, but it was only on on the army reserve a few years later, but in a different unit, the Army Pay Corps, and that involved nothing to do with anti-aircraft or anything like that.
And what were you doing with the Army Pay Corps? Why were you called up for them? Again, as a reserve officer.
I trained at with other officers on a special course for about 20 officers at Devizes, and subsequently we were posted to a regimental pay corps area nearest to our home, if it suited us. And I went to Canterbury and did 2 weeks every year for about, I think, about 4 years. And merely performed in the pay office there at their headquarters. About 50% were military and 50% civilians.
I think that's possibly the end of the main part. I just want to go back to this I didn't really pick up on you enough, I think, but you mentioned that this pay corps officer wasn't a pay corps officer, he was actually an MI something.
Yes.
Could you tell me a little, just to finish up, tell me a bit about that. How did you find out and what do you think he was doing?
Yes. The year after my retirement, my wife and I went to Switzerland for a holiday in the summer. Going on holiday at Bâle station in Switzerland, we were waiting there for a train, and on that same platform was this Lieutenant Lammercraft, who was with me in Tournai on the he was doing the pay corps officer, and he was in civilian clothes with a briefcase, and I went over to him and asked him. Strange to meet him. What was he doing? He said, "Well, I work for the government." I said, "I'm in military intelligence, MI5," and he said, "While I was in Tournai, he said I had to control as much as I could of movements of currency by officers," and he said, "I had you and the unit commander there also under control. If you'd done anything wrong, I would have known about it."
So he was basically monitoring these massive currency, unofficial currency movements.
That is correct, yes. Nothing more, but apparently there was a lot of movement of currency, but that side of it didn't interest me because I had a job to go back to and I didn't want to lose it.
Thank you very much.